Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special welcome to Undivided subscribers. Coming up today, we're going to hear from Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Fortney and House Minority Leader Drew Stokesbury on the new drug possession law that passed in the special session yesterday. So we'll have two in-depth interviews on that topic, both from the political angle, what happened behind the scenes for something to come together, but also on the ground law enforcement angle, what Sheriff Fortney thinks about the new law and what his county is dealing with when it comes to drugs and public safety. Also coming up, we'll discuss, and I think it's going to be a theme today on this drug crisis and what's going on. We mentioned it at the bottom of the show yesterday that King County's Regional Homelessness Authority CEO Mark Doans resigned. So we're going to discuss that and maybe some of the reasons why. And also an interesting decision from the Seattle Times to close off comments on the article. Later on, as we dip outside of Washington State, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is asking other states to send help to the southern border. We've discussed this before, that I think every governor in the country being impacted by the drug epidemic should care and want to help at the southern border, because that has a lot to do with it. We have a lot to get to today, but I actually have two opportunities on Saturday for you and I and Nicole and the whole gang to get together. One of them is a volunteer opportunity. I've posted it, information on it for subscribers at Patreon and Locals. I did put it behind a paywall because it reduces the likelihood that crazy people are going to show up and ruin all our fun. But there is the one day of service happening in Seattle on Saturday. And Undivided's charity of the year, as selected by subscribers, is We Heart Seattle, which is a citizen-driven nonprofit that has like gone out to clean up homeless camps, etc. So we're going to do that on Saturday at 10 a.m. Again, the details are on Patreon and Locals. And Andrea Suarez, who's in charge of We Heart Seattle, actually went out today and took a little video, brace yourself, a video of the area that we're going to be cleaning up as a group on Saturday. Here's what she sent.
Everybody's worried on Saturday for Mayor Serve Day if we have enough trash for everybody to pick up. And I would say that this entire Northwest Queen Anne Greenbelt, Tim and I just hiked probably a quarter mile, and not only are we going to be here on Saturday, but we're also going to come down
careful, Andrew,
Sunday as well. We will have needles to contend with on this pit because this is a very old abandoned camp.
Yeah, so I invite you to join me, to join Nicole, my fiance will be there, to join Andrea Suarez. And again, there's a reason why I have the details behind a paywall. It's just, you know, Andrea has contended with some pretty crazy people at some of these things. And so we just want to make sure that that's not the case. But if you want to become a subscriber and come out and join us at that litter cleanup, go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And you can sign up on either Patreon or Locals. And also by signing up, you become part of Undivided's charity team. We pick a charity of the year every year. It was Brigadoon Service Dogs last year. And then we look for ways to either contribute monetarily or to get together like we're doing on Saturday to help the environment and help the world. Second thing I got to tell you about, and this is a really fun one, and it's deeply meaningful to Nicole and I, our late friend Dory Monson. You might know, if you were a fan of his, that he liked to bet on the ponies. We, in fact, had gone just a couple years before he died to Emerald Downs to, there's us. Wow, I was blonde in that picture, young and blonde. We went to bet on the ponies with Dory. He really loved going down to Emerald Downs. And so on Saturday, after the litter cleanup, starting at 2 p.m., Emerald Downs is going to be hosting the Dory Monson Memorial Purse. So there is going to be a horse race in honor of Dory Monson at Emerald Downs. We expect that racing is going to start at 2 p.m., and that particular race is going to be somewhere between 2 and 4 p.m. So if you want to go to Emerald Downs, I think you can buy tickets at the door. Nicole's going to be there. I'm going to be there. We had some wine yesterday with Suzanne Monson. I know that she's going to be there, and she would love to see some fans of Dory there. Nicole, are you going to actually bet on the ponies? I'm going to go down. I forget what Dory's trick was for, like, he'd go down and see the ponies. I think wasn't it that whichever one took a poo, whichever one he saw before the race, that was his trick, right?
Something like that, yes.
If he saw them take a, you know, then he knew they were like light and they were going to go faster. So that's my plan, is I'm going to go down. I'm going to watch for which one's taking a doo-doo. And I'm going to be like, that's my horse. And then Dory from heaven will do the rest for me.
Okay. That sounds good.
You know, Dory, I have so much faith in you that I'm going to bet my entire life savings on the horse that takes me for the Dory Monson Memorial Purse. So anyway.
That'll be fun. It's really special they're doing that. Matt Johnson, his producer for the Seahawks, or his old producer for the Seahawks, has helped make this happen, and it's pretty cool.
So it'll be fun. So it's going to be a busy day. I hope we have time to shower between
the
litter cleanup and the horse racing at Emerald Downs, because I want to look nice. I've got a little dress picked out. I'm going to need a shower. But if you're coming to the litter pick, by the way, sturdy shoes.
Horse poo anyway.
Yeah.
Around there.
Sturdy shoes if you're coming to the litter pick that a needle can't puncture through would probably be good. Some gloves, etc. Anyway, okay. So two opportunities. Let us know if you're going to come, because we'd love to see you there. And please say hello if you see us wandering around with a drink in our hand, looking at the backs of horses. All right, let's get to our top story of the day. As I told you guys on the show yesterday, there is thank God, we are avoiding a July 1st cutoff where drugs would be de facto legalized in Washington state. There was a special session yesterday. It lasted just one day, and both sides came together and overwhelmingly, there was just a few no votes in the Senate and the House, passed a bill to make sure that drug possession and open drug use in public remains a crime in Washington state. And look, I know there's some disagreement about, it used to be a felony. Okay, now it's a gross misdemeanor. And I had some people I was seeing saying, oh, it has to be a felony. Does it though? Think about that. I mean, I'm very law and order. A felony, I don't even agree with it being a felony. So I'm actually okay with gross misdemeanor. Now, if you're trafficking drugs or dealing drugs, heck yeah, that should be a felony. Like, you belong in prison, because every drug you're selling can kill someone. But I think that the goal is we want to get people better, right? We want to get people better and contributing to society. And so I've read through the bill. I posted some details of it on Patreon and Locals. I think it is a really good compromise. Not everybody didn't get everything they wanted, but that's how compromise works. I did want to chat with the new Republican leader in the House, Drew Stokesbury, who was elected as Republican leader the day after the regular session ended. And so his beginning of being the House Republican leader was dealing with this absolute train wreck. But Representative Stokesbury was nice enough to join us to talk about what led up to this compromise and whether Republicans are happy with it. Representative Stokesbury, welcome to Undivided.
Yeah, good to see you, Brandy.
Well, I should also congratulate you on your leadership position.
Thank you. It's a big responsibility. We got our work cut out for us. And talk about trial by fire. This is a big issue that I immediately found myself in the middle of following our leadership change.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're getting 2 weeks of definitely testing of being a good leader. So hopefully it's working out all right behind the scenes.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, as I think we'll talk about in a second, pretty pleased with the direction of this particular policy. But it's been an interesting one to work on, for sure.
So talk about behind the scenes. You know, the governor comes out last night of the regular session and says, I'm going to call a special session. So just take people through as much as you're able behind the scenes about the negotiations that have gone on since the end of the regular session.
Yeah. So I had an email from the governor's office asking if he could have a Zoom meeting with me for a few minutes the next day. I agreed, assumed he would just say congratulations, you know, maybe say go Kraken, make a joke about apples or something. But it turns out he wanted to talk about the Blake bill and what could be done. I was really frustrated when I had heard that sort of either the night of our last day of session or maybe the next morning he had made some remarks to the press blaming Republicans for not passing a bill. Well, you know, I know you know this, Brandy. I hope most of your listeners do too. But Republicans don't have enough votes right now to pass anything. By definition, we have 40 members. We need 50 to pass something. We need at least 10 Democrats, probably a lot more as a practical matter. So the idea that Republicans were responsible for this, I think was pretty out of touch. And as I explained to him, just factually wrong. We were very upfront that we wanted a bill. We wanted to make sure that drugs were illegal at the state level, but we didn't want to settle for an inferior, inadequate bill, especially if an inadequate bill would have preempted cities and counties from solving the problem on their own. Essentially, what Republicans were asked to do was to pass, to vote for a really weak bill that wouldn't have solved the problem, but would have prevented cities and counties from solving the problem themselves. And we didn't view that as a viable solution. We would rather have there be no state law, but let cities and counties pass local laws that did make sense and that would work. And we were upfront about that. And I communicated that again to the governor on the Tuesday after we adjourned, which was Republicans are not the bottleneck here. We want the bill, but we're not going to be held hostage for a bad bill. We'll only vote for a good bill. But if there's a good bill that can be voted on, a lot of us will vote for it. And the issue was not Republicans, but rather the majority party that didn't want to bring a bill to the floor unless a majority of their caucus supported it. But as long as we could find some sort of middle ground amongst most of my members and most of the Democratic members, then I think we can move forward. So that's what I communicated to him on Tuesday.
Can I just ask what his response was when you pushed back at the assertion that Republicans were somehow to blame for not getting this done during the regular session?
Well, I got to say, I was pleasantly surprised at the reception. This was my first meeting with him one-on-one. It was my first full day as House Republican leader. So I didn't really know what to expect. I really only know the governor from kind of his public persona. I've been critical when I thought the need had arisen. So I didn't know what to expect. I expected a lot of pushback, and he did not push back with my characterization of events. He sort of nodded along. So I don't know if that meant he agreed with me and was only saying what he said for the cameras. I don't know if he was just being polite and he still really believes what he said. But for whatever it's worth, I explained House Republican position. He, in our private meeting, didn't dispute it.
Gotcha.
So then over the next few days, I got a lot of phone calls. I made a lot of phone calls to and from other legislators, both Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate. I got a lot of phone calls from members of the House Democratic Caucus asking me, is there a way to get Republican votes to put together some version of a statewide bill that could pass? I think a lot of folks were expressing frustration with how their majority leadership managed the process and allowing a bill that wasn't that good of a bill to come to the floor that couldn't even pass. But I also talked with a bunch of folks over in the Senate. There were a number of Senate Democrats that were helpful, including Mark Mullett, I think was instrumental in making sure we could get a good bill put together. So there was a lot of like shuttle diplomacy and one-on-one member discussion, some that I was involved in, some that other, pairs of members were involved in. I think over the first week or so, the House Democrats continued to try to look for a way where they could pass a partisan bill that only Democrats would need to vote for. But again, thanks to folks like Mark Mullett in the Senate, there wasn't really a path for that, at least at that point in time. So about a week or two ago, and again, this has all sort of seemed like one really long day or week, so I might be messing up the timeline a little bit, but eventually we got to the point where Republicans put together a document where we said, here are the five things we need to see in a bill if House Republicans are going to consider voting for it. So we circulated that to the governor and to the majority caucuses in the House and the Senate. And then at some point, we kind of engaged in, sort of face-to-face, virtual, but over Teams and Zoom negotiation. The majority party kind of made a series of offers. We explained our position. And at the end of the day, what kind of emerged last weekend was a bill that essentially accomplished perhaps all five of our points. I think, maybe you could argue only four and a half. I think we got all four of that. Four things we got, and then the fifth thing we sort of got just in a different way than we had hoped for, but I think we still get the same end result. So I thought that was something I could sell to my caucus and would be significantly better than the status quo, significantly better than no bill at all, significantly better than any version that had come up for a vote before. So each leader brought it back to their caucus, and we decided that there was enough support to bring it to the floor, and So it passed earlier today.
Yeah. Can you just really quickly, what is the thing you got like half of the five?
Yeah. So, you know, our big concern was not just that there be accountability and criminal penalties for drug possession, particularly when somebody is unwilling to get treatment, right? I think if somebody is able to get treatment, that's almost everybody's goal. Yeah. But the next question is, what happens if they don't want treatment or they, you know, are unable to be successfully treated because they keep, you know, going back and reusing? You know, we wanted not just to make sure that there was appropriate penalties on paper, but that those penalties were actually implementable. So our concern was that while the conference version that failed on the last day of session sort of provided for a gross misdemeanor on paper, the way it worked in practice with diversions away from trial towards treatment, somebody could sort of find themselves in a perpetual revolving door where they were never actually successfully going to rehab or getting treatment, but they were never actually facing criminal penalties. And so we are worried about sort of that revolving door. So the new version fixes that by, we had a suggested way to fix that. Instead, the version that just passed fixes it in a slightly different way by essentially ensuring that prosecutors after the first offense have to agree to that diversion. So we think that'll fix the revolving door issue. We sort of worked with prosecutors on the language, and we think, you know, that will avoid a situation where somebody is going through this revolving door, never getting treatment, but never getting charged. Because if you get to that point, the prosecutor could say, all right, we're not going to let you keep asking for treatment because you clearly aren't submitting to it. So instead, we're going to pursue criminal penalties.
Yeah. So I think maybe this is oversimplifying things, but it really seemed like House leader, Democratic leadership had a choice. Either they could try to appease the kind of further left fringe of their party that is more in favor of drug decriminalization, or they could pivot and try to work with Republicans on something. And obviously it sounds like they pivoted to work with Republicans on something. Again, and you alluded to it maybe with Mark Mullett over in the Senate, what do you think forced their hand on that to say, no, we're not going to try again to pass a bill with only Democratic support that's watered down that the progressives can agree on, but we're going to work with Republicans on something? Was there a factor in there that you think forced them to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have a theory or two. I don't want to you know, assign motive irresponsibly, but you know, I think there are a handful of members. You know, Mark Mullett is probably the best example, that just want the best policy for the state of Washington and don't really care who gets the credit or don't really care about your partisan affiliation. They just want common sense solutions, and Mark's been a real stellar example of that on this issue and many others throughout his time in the legislature.
Yeah, we had two Democrats on, by the way, Senator Mark Mullett and Senator John Lovick, who came on the show and said they would not support a watered down version of the bill. And so maybe that put them in a tough position.
Yeah, that absolutely. I think, you know, they deserve a lot of credit because, you know, just like Republicans, we not only have to win elections by persuading swing voters, but, you know, we got to persuade our base voters that we're worth supporting, we're worth knocking on doors for. You know, Democrats have the same thing. So they, you know, they both have to appeal to swing voters, but also have to, you know, appeal to their base voters. And so on something like this, where a big chunk of Democratic base sort of wants to be more lenient with respect to some of these penalties, for somebody like Mark or Senator Lovick to say, hey, I don't think that's good policy, this is what I believe in, I'm going to, you know, stick to it regardless of party, you know, that takes guts. And so I appreciate that. And so I think them standing firm is a big reason we got here. But I also think that there are plenty of folks in Democratic leadership who, you know, might personally be okay with a little bit more of a partisan solution, or, you know, a little bit, I would characterize it as a weaker bill or less accountability. I'm sure they would have a more diplomatic way of phrasing their different perspective. But I think for some folks in Democratic leadership, they also just view this through a political lens of they don't want to be seen as the party who was in charge when all hard drugs became legal in Washington. And so I also think there was a contingent of leaders who felt that while they might personally have been okay with a bill that wasn't bipartisan, that wasn't so strong, they thought the political cost of doing that was too high. And the net best political outcome for them was to work with Republicans. So You know, but my philosophy is, you know, if there's a way to create better outcomes for the people of Washington, you should never not take that. So I think if Republicans weren't willing to find a way to support a bill that made sure drugs were illegal and made sure there was accountability for people unwilling to submit to treatment, that was a better outcome for the state of Washington. And that was something that Republicans needed to make sure we could support.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said it, because to sit here and listen to all the political calculations that leadership over on the Democratic side might be making while people are dying on our streets just seems so out of touch to me. I'm glad you guys were able to get a bipartisan solution through. I'm sure it's not a surprise to you that it's and I'm sure you feel the same way, that it's insane that it took a special session to do it. But Representative Drew Stokesbury, the new House Minority Leader, we appreciate your time and you helping to get something done that I think will be meaningful for the state.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Brandy. Thanks for all the attention you put on it. And, you know, I hope others know that I'm certain, while I think this is a pretty good deal, a pretty good outcome, the best we could hope for under these circumstances, I'm not saying it's the perfect outcome, the perfect bill. I think that there's a lot more that needs to be done. This certainly won't solve the problem overnight, but I think it'll at least help give police officers and prosecutors the tools they need to help start to stem the tide. And one of my final pleas to the other caucus leaders was to keep an open mind that we can come back in future sessions and continue to listen to input from our communities and public safety leaders to continue to make changes. And not think that we are perfect all the time as legislators, because we're not.
Yeah, on this issue and the pursued bill, we're hoping that they are maybe willing to revisit that next year. So, Representative Stokesbury, thank you so much, and please go enjoy life. Okay.
I will try. It was a little cloudy here in Olympia this morning, but it's getting some sun later this afternoon. So
good. All right. Thanks so much. Big thank you to new House Minority Leader Drew Stokesbury. We look forward to, who of course took over for J.T. Wilcox. So we look forward to having him on the show more often. And it was a little trial by fire for him to be elected House Minority Leader and then immediately have to figure out what to do with this drug possession bill. So you got the political perspective on that issue. Of course, there's always a question, I think, of when politicians pass things, how is that going to work in practice? And is it going to help people? And certainly, I don't think you can deny it's better than what has been on the books for the last 2 years, which essentially gave law enforcement no tools to try to get people into treatment options who at least initially were hesitant to do so on their own. And so we asked Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Forty, and we know like all areas, you know, that county has been dealing with a lot of issues around substance abuse and related crime. And so we asked the sheriff to come on to talk about his perspective of the new bill, what he knows about it at least, as the details are fairly new, and also some of the other challenges that the county is facing. You know, we talked on the show, I believe it was last week, about a little baby girl, one-year-old girl, who died of a suspected fentanyl overdose, and the mom was arrested in that case. And so we just wanted his perspective on the drug crisis, the new bill, and how things are shaping up. Sheriff Fortney, welcome back to Undivided. Thanks for being here.
You got it, Brady.
Not the best topic to talk about. You know, we're going to get to this really tragic death that happened up in your county, but obviously we finally have a Blake fix, or at least an agreement to make sure that drug possession in public use remains a crime in Washington State. Can you talk a little bit about the extent to which you've been involved, you know, from the beginning of the legislative session to now in trying to craft something?
Yeah, so when I say me, the office, me and the undersheriff mainly, we've been very vocal advocates this session. We learned a few years back that we need to be vocal. And so this started last year for us prior to the session. We met with every legislative official short of three, and it wasn't any problem. We just logistically didn't work out in time. And so there were some difficult conversations in there because we don't always see eye to eye, but I thought it was important for the community and for us as a sheriff's office to be having them. So we did. And that continued through the legislative session, specifically for us, it was all public safety related. And the Blake was a huge, huge thing for us. I really wish they could have got something done within the 4 months being down there full time. And, you know, it wasn't a surprise. They knew it was coming. But I just told you I didn't have many nice things to say about it, but I'm going to kind of go back on that. I'm glad I hope they're coming to a resolution. It looks like they will very soon here. So I'm thankful for that. I'm good with the gross misdemeanor. I'm completely okay with that. And I stand by my position of, I don't want to lock a whole bunch of people up in the Snohomish County Jail for dope charges. I just don't care, Brandy. And I know that's not popular in some circles. I truly want people to get help. But I can tell you this, until the state of Washington figures out something different, I would rather have them in my facility across the street here in Everett, because we have very professional people, medical people that can take care of them. And hopefully they can make a better life decision. So again, I'm not advocating to fill up the Snohomish County Jail, but I think it has to be part of the solution. Accountability does.
Yeah, and that has been this push and pull. There is a segment of the Democratic Party in Olympia of lawmakers who don't think that drug addiction should be criminalized in any way. And so this has been sort of an effort for them to de facto legalize hard drugs. And then on the other side, you know, there's this belief that, oh, there's people who just want to, as you said, you know, lock them up and throw away the key, which common sense people are somewhere in the middle. But you mentioned that when you were having conversations with the lawmakers, it really was public safety focused. For you, for your department, for your county, in what ways is the substance abuse crisis manifesting into a public safety crisis?
Oh, my goodness. I think people can see it. I don't think you need to be a public safety executive to figure this stuff out. I just don't right now, because it is front and center. Listen, I've been doing this for 27 years, almost all of that on the streets of Snohomish County, where I'm from. So it's very personal to me, right? I want people to be taken care of. But this fentanyl, it's a game changer. It truly is. You know, I dealt with the meth crisis back in the early 2000s, late 90s. Then it kind of switched to opioids and heroin. And this fentanyl is like nothing I have ever seen. And it is becoming a public safety crisis, because while we see the people in need in our streets, and we want them to get help, we truly do, it's just a matter of fact that those people will commit crimes. Sometimes they're referred to as petty crimes. I don't like that term myself as the sheriff, because I think when you're a victim of a crime, any crime is very important to the person, the victim. But I think that's just, we can't talk about one without talking about the other. It is creating a crime issue, not just in Snohomish County or the state of Washington, but I think we see it nationwide.
Yeah, there was an effort in multiple jurisdictions, including Snohomish County and some cities within, to say, okay, if state lawmakers fail again and they don't do what needs to be done and craft some sort of statewide legislation that we can live with, I know there were efforts to say, okay, let's put our own ordinances on the books so come July 1st, we have something that we can enforce. Would you have rather it just been left up to the county and the cities, or are you glad that there is a state solution, even if it maybe isn't perfect?
That's a good question. I think I'm pretty okay with the state solution, okay, if it's a reasonable one. And I think what they come up with will probably be a reasonable solution. It took a long time to get there, but hey, we're here and I think they're going to pass it. It is easier when the state kind of makes it black and white. These are the laws. This is what we are able to enforce, than having different jurisdictions depending on what line versus unincorporated county or a city jurisdiction you might be in. That gets confusing really quick. And we've had enough confusion over the last 3.5 years in public safety. I think if the state wants to pass a law and there's an accountability component, but it's very heavy on getting people into treatment, I mean, shoot, as the elected sheriff here, I'm going to be all for that every day.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about the human loss and the human suffering, you guys had a one-year-old who died of a suspected fentanyl overdose. I got to imagine that hits hard for your department.
It does. It does for everybody. I think everybody in the community too, because it's fairly well known what happened. We have some investigation to do still, but yeah, it's hard. It's hard. You know, we talked about, you know, first responders, whether they're police officers or deputy sheriffs, or you're in the fire services. It is very hard to see that stuff over the course of my career. It's for me, I can only speak for me personally, that has been the most difficult thing to either get through or to see. You know, as professionals, we have to keep our composure, but it is something that does impact you. It impacts you as a human being. Forget the uniform for just a second. And it's been a tough week. We had a violent weekend in Snohomish County. Actually, there's been a lot going on. This, I know we're here to talk about this specific incident. I can't attribute every single thing that happened over the weekend to fentanyl. I just can't. But it is a player, and it has been a game changer. And I'm a little worried about where we're going with the fentanyl crisis and where we're at.
Yeah. Have you guys seen, you know, I have more questions about the infant that died, but have you guys also seen Trank up there, this fentanyl horse tranquilizer mix?
Anecdotally, we have. Actually, we have a brand new, not brand new, she's been here about 8 months, medical director inside of the Snohomish County Jail. We've never had a full-time physician before with medical services. We do now. And she has just got us a testing process for tranq. As people come into our facility, we test them. That's what we do. We need to know what's going on. And so we will have some better data on that in the near future. So we are, as technology increases, we're trying to be on the cutting edge of all that stuff, especially in our correctional facility. So I think all of the above is here in Snohomish County. We'd be naive to say otherwise.
Yeah, it's just that I've seen some images of people who are using it and it's disgusting. I mean, rotting flesh and just really horrifying. You know, about the baby that died, you posted making kind of a plea to people that, hey, you know, you've heard that this substance abuse thing is an issue. If this makes you sad, which I'm sure it does, you have to get involved. Can you reiterate that for everyone who's watching and listening here?
Yeah, so we're at a time in history, I think, Brandy, where the community does need to be involved. We have seen, and again, they're going to fix it. So I want to make sure I'm giving them credit where credit is due. But we went 4 months without a fix. I think there was a lot of involvement from law enforcement and, to a certain extent, the community. And it's a fine balance, I like to say, Brandy, because most people in society are raising their kids. They're going through family life. They're working full time. They don't have the time to come to the state legislature in Olympia or the Snohomish County Council in downtown Everett and tell their boss at work, I'll be back in an hour or two. I'm going to go testify for this local ordinance. Let's face it, that's not happening on a mass scale, but it might be time to do that, to let our elected officials know that the current course we're on, it's not adequate enough, in my opinion. And whether that's accountability or getting folks treatment, we need to figure out something when it comes to this fentanyl. And I think it is time for the community to be involved.
Yeah. On kind of a broader public safety scale, you know, to me going into the session, I thought, well, gosh, obviously public safety has to be priority number one. And we were looking at what are they going to do to fix the police pursuit issue? What are they going to do on the Blake decision? As someone whose job it is to protect a county, the people of your county, how do you feel about where we are now from a public safety perspective versus where we were before the session?
Well, the two major things I would want them to fix, which would be, we can't legalize drugs in the state of Washington. They didn't until today. Okay. So they went the entire session and didn't. And the pursuit fix, I'm kind of an outlier on this one. I'll be honest with you. I'm a glass half full type of guy. I want to be positive, but Brandy, they did not fix the pursuit issue.
No.
It is not fixed. We are in almost the identical position prior to this session starting than we are today. So if you have elected officials on your show and they want to take credit for fixing the pursuit issue, please call them on it because it is not fixed. People can still break into your house and steal your stuff and get to a car and it's a free pass. It's not okay. It's just not okay. We've talked about it before and I don't want to go down this tangent too far, but the pursuit thing is one of the things that is wreaking havoc in all of our communities right now. It is because it makes the criminal element brazen. They're not dumb. They know the laws that are passed. It hits the streets really quick. And they know if they make it to a car in the state of Washington, for the most part, they can get away.
Yeah, we did have, did you see our interview with Senator John Lovick?
I did not see that one.
Well, I thought you watched every day.
I'm sorry, I do, but I didn't miss that one.
Deeply offended. Well, you know, he and I talked about the pursuit fix and how, you know, I'm glad they got something across the finish line, even if it allows police to pursue one more vehicle this year than they wouldn't have last year. But, you know, I think even he realizes it didn't do enough. And so we had a nice chat about it. I think he knew I was sort of disappointed in the result of things. But you mentioned fentanyl and how you think it's contributing to some of the other bigger public safety issues. You mentioned the violent weekend in Snohomish County. We've been talking a lot about the situation at the southern border. And then if we combine all of that with the inability to pursue a lot of vehicles, how does that impact the trafficking of drugs through our state?
It's hard. It is hard to say because when we're not able to pursue, we don't know for certain, right? I think we do a fairly decent job in Snohomish County. We have the largest combined drug task force up here in the state of Washington. I'm proud of that. I mean, it's been difficult the last 3 years to hang on to that task force with police staffing, but we made it a priority and did so for exactly the question that you asked. Our patrol guys unless they run into something at the cartel level, aren't dealing with that stuff. It takes long, sometimes years long investigation. So I would just want to assure people, without giving a whole lot of detail, those investigations are taking place in Snohomish County. But to your question, when people can get into a car and they don't have to stop for the police, literally, I mean that literally, it makes it very tough for us. I don't know if they have a trunk full of fentanyl pills or not. I can't say that because we are not allowed by state law to chase them. And I want to be very careful because this question comes up often when I'm out in the community and with you. I know why you're asking it. I don't want to be that elected official that is somehow trying to imply that I want more and more police pursuits. They are dangerous. I do recognize that. We wish we didn't have any, but we have to have at least the authority and the discretion to pursue when we feel it was safe. We have to make that in real time. When it is a blanket assessment by state elected leaders in Olympia just to not pursue, holy smokes, I think we can look back and see it's not working. Again, I don't want more police pursuits. I wish we didn't have to even have this conversation, but it is a fact of life that the criminal element will run from the police when we try to pull them over. And what we're doing is not working. Side note, doesn't get talked about a whole lot. I've talked about it. The state of New Jersey did the same thing, Brandy. And they went back, was a year, 18 months later, and said, holy smokes, what did we do? This isn't working. And they changed it right down to stolen cars because vehicle thefts went off the charts in the state of New Jersey. We haven't got that done yet in the last 2 years in the state of Washington.
Yeah, and you and I are in lockstep on this. I mean, I think it was a straw man, fear-mongering tactics to suggest that, oh, if you want to fix the law, then you just want police to pursue anyone for any reason without any judgment whatsoever, which is just ridiculous. On a positive note, since you said you're a glass half full kind of guy, I was curious, our producer Nicole lives up in your fine county and had been talking to some businesses out there on 99 and Airport Way, and they said they've seen some improvements in, you know, just ne'er-do-wells around and drug use and things like that. Have you guys been doing anything up there on 99?
Oh, man, Brandy, this is a whole show in itself, but I'll give you a brief answer. You bet we have. We are, I think, very unique in the world of public safety at the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office in the last 3.5 years when it hasn't always been comfortable to do our job. And I'll be honest, we struggled with it. Especially 2021 when the laws were in effect and we weren't sure. We still went out and did law enforcement. I want to make that clear. I attended a meeting in that exact area. We call it the Mariner Square Business Association. It started with 12 business, either managers or owners. And I went there as the elected sheriff. And I didn't have to, but I went there for 2.5 hours. I got an earful and it was not comfortable and it was not good. They were fed up as business owners in South Everett. But what's important is now it's 2.5 years since that meeting. I go there almost on a monthly basis and still meet with them. It has grown to 50 businesses, Brandy. That is huge in South Everett. And now we've crossed jurisdictional lines because one side is county on Highway 99 and one side is the city of Everett. We partner with Chief Templeman in the city of Everett. They have come to our briefings. We have done criminal emphasis in that area for going on 3 years now. And it's not perfect. There is no panacea when it comes to this. I am not advocating to lock everybody up to solve societal problems, but I am saying we have listened to how the community wants to be policed in that area. We have taken their input and we are doing things down there. And I hope they do see a difference. And again, it's not perfect, but I do think you can see a difference down there. Yes.
Well, it's obvious. Nicole, do you want to say anything? Yeah, because Nicole said that it's very, very clear.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. The business I was talking to was Mazda of Everett, and he was replacing windshields on a regular basis just from people walking by and throwing rocks at cars. And he was ecstatic and had nothing but great things to say about the way that you've all come together to fix that area.
There you go, Sheriff. Some feedback.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. Well, Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Fortney, we do appreciate your time and your care and concern for public safety at a time when so many leaders seem to have forgotten that that's their paramount responsibility to all of us. So thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Brandy.
Yeah, Sheriff Adam Fortney is great. And Nicole, I like that little addition there to kind of a real world perspective of something that's working when you do focus on an area where, hey, we have a big problem here. Businesses aren't happy. And you actually say, okay, we're going to make it better. And it's nice
and
to hear
it's cleared that. Up a pretty big area. It goes up Airport Way to 128th. And I mean, there's still some lingering around, but for the most part, it looked bad a couple years ago, and it has gotten better and better. Like I'd say monthly.
But, just, I mean, wow. What can happen when you actually let law enforcement enforce the law?
Right.
It's a truly remarkable thing.
Go figure.
Go figure. All right. Coming up, we are going to talk about the fact that the CEO of King County's Regional Homelessness Authority has resigned. I have my thoughts on why, although we'll share Mark Doan's rationale for why he resigned, according to what he sent out to employees of the Homelessness Authority. But first, I already heard that some of you have taken the First Mark Challenge. Man, we've only been doing the endorsements for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, so that's great. I've been talking about First Mark Insurance and the fact that Mike and I have joined the First Mark family. And I've also been saying that why would you not take the First Mark Challenge? Because it's free. The only possible thing that could happen is you come away from it and you decide to keep the insurance you already have. Like, that's the only thing. But really, you can do it. You can find out a lot about whether you're properly insured for what you have. Mike and I definitely weren't. So that was one of the things we learned. And like hundreds of people who've already taken the First Mark Challenge, you could save a lot of money and get the same insurance or even better insurance. Here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah. And the other thing is you never pay First Mark Insurance anything for that service. And it's awesome. It's like having an, I felt very fancy doing it. I told you I felt like a full-fledged adult. I'm like, wow, I have an insurance broker. But you're not actually paying them. Insurance companies pay the brokers when they bring them clients. And so Mike and I, we ended up getting, we knew we were really underinsured going into it. So we ended up getting way more insurance for about the same price as what we were paying before. And so it was a no-brainer for us. So if you would like to do what I've done, what hundreds of people have done, take the First Mark Challenge. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. There's an easy little thing you can click. And Dave was great. And he's a Marine. I can't say former Marine because people are always like, once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine. So he's just an honest, nice guy. And he'll tell you if what you've got right now is just fine or if you need something else. And so check it out. firstmarkinsurance.com. We love having them as a sponsor on the show. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. I can't say I'm surprised that the head of the Regional Homelessness Authority in King County has resigned, because there have been a couple doozies of stories lately. There was a story the Seattle Times did about how the Regional Homelessness Authority hasn't been able to fulfill basic functions like getting contractors paid on time. So you have these service providers who are doing the actual work of outreach, et cetera, and they've had to blow through their savings, use credit cards, because the Regional Homelessness Authority isn't getting them their money on time. So that's just some basic level stuff where I know the Regional Homelessness Authority is relatively new, but at this point they should be able to, provide the basic functions. And when the Regional Homelessness Authority was formed, it was sold to us as a panacea. This is going to be the thing that really fixes the homeless issue. We got to look at it regionally, et cetera, et cetera. But then they hire this guy, Mark Doan, and I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it was clear he was someone who's highly ideological. And I think that seeped into a lot of what the Homelessness Authority did. We just played, I'll play a clip of it again because I'll look for any opportunity to play a clip of it again. One of their boards, which was like the Continuum of Care board, they were having this nomination process, and one of the nominees to be on the board was a sex offender. And one of the women on the board says, hey, he inappropriately touched me, and said she'd taken that allegation to the police. And then she got screamed at by the board co-chair for even suggesting that a sex offender shouldn't be on the board. Listen.
This is about equity. And everyone deserves housing. I don't care if they're a sex offender. I don't care if they're black. I don't care if they're indigenous. I don't care if they're a criminal. I don't care if they're coming out of jail, prison. Everyone deserves housing.
Okay. Okay, Shanae, we got you.
No, it's not okay. That's the point.
So, I mean, here you have, I really think, an entity that is way too ideological, also obsessed with identity politics and just putting people in positions because of characteristics that have nothing to do and are not relevant to their ability to solve the homeless crisis and help homeless individuals. Now, I think that a lot of that is the reason that Mark Doan's probably resigned. He says it was because of burnout. It's like, first of all, okay, I get the burnout thing. Work's hard. Having jobs is hard. And I don't doubt that trying to solve the egregious and worsening homeless crisis that King County has is a difficult job. But I'll tell you what, if I was making $247,000 a year to do that job, I'd be willing to accept a pretty high level of burnout. Wouldn't you, Nicole?
Oh, I would. Although I'm surprised that he just didn't say I can't do it. Like, this is impossible, right?
I mean, there are a lot of people.
That's what he should say.
Who think that the task of that, of heading that agency, is an impossible task.
Yeah, it's a burnout because you've burned out. You've done what you could and you couldn't complete the job. But I guess it's not surprising either.
He says he's not burned out yet, but he has seen people. Let me read the exact quote from the Seattle Times. Oh, here's the Seattle Times article, by the way. He says that after 5 years, I am tired. And he hasn't been the CEO for 5 years, but he was part of the process of building the Regional Homelessness Authority. He says, I believe the time has come for me to pass the baton. Well, he does say he burned out, I guess. He says he's tired, but he's seen like a lot of different service providers get burned out in this job, in this career. And I don't, like, again, I'm not doubting that it's hard work, but you got paid, I think, more than the mayor of Seattle, right? The mayor of Seattle makes like around $200,000.
I think so. Somewhere
to do that job, more than the governor. Mm-hmm. And didn't you know it was going to be hard work going into it? So here you have this Regional Homelessness Authority that has already been failing at basic tasks like getting contractors paid, has these crazy meetings where it leaves people wondering, is that the person that is going to try to end homelessness? The one who's screaming at a woman who says she was touched by a sex offender and saying that even sex offenders are included in equity? Absolutely unbelievable. Now, there's one more wrinkle of this story I just got to discuss because we were having wine yesterday and this was brought up. So the Seattle Times, I just showed you the article from the Seattle Times. Well, if you scroll down to the bottom of it, you might notice something interesting. And that is that the Seattle Times has closed off comments to this article. And I'll read what it says. Let me see here. The Seattle Times closes, it's highlighted there at the very bottom. The Seattle Times closes comments on particularly sensitive stories. If you would like to share your thoughts or experiences in relation to this story, please email the reporter or submit a letter to be considered for publication in our opinion section. You can read more about our community policies here. The Seattle Times closes comments on particularly sensitive stories. What is so sensitive about a highly paid government official resigning his position? Why do you think they close comments on the stories, Nicole?
Oh, because not everybody, you know, would say he was great, thank you for your service, and leave it at that. I think there would be some criticism, as in, you know, you're burnt out, how about you finish the job, how about you, you know, you're leaving the job undone, how about you take care of this? Yep. There's nothing, what have you accomplished? There'd be criticism.
Yeah, and you can't let people criticize someone who is Black and has a different sexual orientation. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, is associated with homelessness.
Yeah. You can't criticize anything that's happening with homelessness because it's particularly sensitive. Shame on you, Seattle Times.
Right.
Either you allow comments on your stories or you don't. That's my position. Either you do or you don't. And you can remove certain comments if they're very vitriolic or hate speech or something. But to me, it's really interesting to see the types of stories that the Seattle Times allows comments mm-hmm. on and the types of stories that they refuse to allow comments on. I would think somebody who's making $250,000 a year, who has failed at the job, would be a story that you'd allow your readers to comment on.
I think so. I don't see why not.
There's no reason why not.
Are you going to tell the story of why we noticed that?
Can we?
Yeah, you asked.
Oh, okay. Approved. So, yeah. So we had wine with Suzanne Monson yesterday. And she was saying that when Dory died, the Seattle Times wanted to do a story. And I knew that because they'd called me for comment, et cetera, et cetera. And she said that she would give them a quote and everything if they agreed to close comments on the Seattle Times story. So it wasn't just a bunch of hateful people who hated Dory. And they didn't publish a story because they refused to close comments.
Right.
So you're telling me that in an basically an obituary.
Right, that's not sensitive enough.
That's not a sensitive thing that you'd close comments on. But when a CEO making $250,000 off the backs of taxpayers resigns, that's too sensitive? And that just ticked me right off because I didn't know that the Seattle Times said, no, we're going to refuse to close comments on a story about someone dying.
Yeah.
A public official. Now, don't get me wrong, I think an argument can be made, again, back to what I said earlier, that either you have comments or you don't.
Right.
Either you have comments or you don't. But to say that a story about Dory after he died wasn't too sensitive,
right,
but a story about Mark Doan's resigning is too sensitive, I think now's a good time to say, if you have a subscription to the Seattle Times, that money would be much better spent on a subscription to Undivided, because we will let you say whatever you want. Absolutely no policing of comments on Patreon or Locals. But yeah, that is absolutely, first of all, it is believable that Mark Doan would resign. Unbelievable that we can't comment on it, because it's a particularly sensitive issue. It's a really good thing that the Seattle Times policies on commenting doesn't apply to me.
I'm not sure it's believable that he resigned, because...
Oh, I think it is.
He was getting paid a lot of money. I mean, it doesn't seem like he was doing much.
Do you think he was fired?
He wasn't doing much. No. I think there was conversations behind the scene. I've heard that Harold is not a big fan.
Oh, yeah, he's not.
So I'm sure there were conversations behind the scenes like, you're not getting anything done. We can't work together. You know, do you want to step away or do you want
to? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always hard to tell in those government positions whether they were encouraged to resign.
You walk away from 147.
247.
I mean, 247. $1,000 job where you're not accomplishing anything and you just walk away.
I guess if you have background knowledge on whether he was forced out, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, send us an email. Okay, and that has been unbelievable. Coming up next, Governor Greg Abbott in Texas is begging other states to send help to the southern border. We'll discuss which states have answered the call. Hint, it's not Washington, in case you are wondering. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? Well, why don't you check out sellwithwes.com and talk to our friend Wes Jones at Wes Jones & Associates about what he can do for you that a traditional real estate agent might not be able to.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwes.com and go to the sell a house feature, and you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website, and you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm gonna treat you fairly.
So that's Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. Just an all-around great guy. He's been selling homes in our area for a really long time, was a longtime sponsor on Dory's show, and so we just love that he's joined the team, and just really appreciate the honesty and the care and concern that he gives to every single client. So if you're in the market to sell your home, check out sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Nicole, you're over there like you want to take the doggy cam, don't you? Oh, yeah. Lucky's having a little dream.
Yeah, I can see her foot.
Well, you got to show the people.
Oh, yeah, I know. Here it goes. I'm Lucky, hoping we catch it.
Are you having a little dream over there?
There, see that?
Somebody told me Lucky was fat the other day. I'm like, she just has a little head and little legs. Lucky, it's okay.
It's not the best angle we've got on her.
Yeah, but. I mean, there's been better angles. She's so cute. That's
what. There it goes.
That's the dog that
running in her sleep,
Mike rescued that had been tied to a tree and left for dead, and then we ended up adopting. That's why we named her Lucky.
She is a lucky dog.
I love having him here today. Usually I don't take them with me. Anyway, I love the dog cam idea. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State for a moment because we're going long on the show today. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has asked other states to send him help at the southern border, which I think is a good and reasonable request, that we don't leave this up to just border states to contend with when the immigration crisis and the border security crisis impacts every single state in the union. So Governor Greg Abbott, he sent out this plea urging the nation's governors to help support Texas's unprecedented border security efforts in the wake of President Joe Biden ending Title 42 last week. He goes on to say in the letter that he sent out, saying the flood of illegal border activity invited by the Biden administration flows directly across the southern border into Texas communities. But this crisis does not stop in our state, which is true. In the federal government's absence, we as governors must band together to combat President Biden's ongoing border crisis and ensure the safety and security that all Americans deserve. And it turns out that a couple folks have any guesses on what states have come to Texas's assistance? Not
California and Washington.
No.
Shocking.
Florida. So this is a story from the Texas Tribune. Greg Abbott asked other governors for help patrolling the Texas-Mexico border. Ron DeSantis answered the call. So Ron DeSantis sending resources over to Texas to assist. Greg Abbott also said on Twitter that Idaho, all the way down there, Idaho will send state police to support our response to the border crisis and help stop drug and human smuggling. I thank Governor Little for deploying these resources. With the help of states like Idaho, we continue to fill dangerous gaps created by Biden's open border policies. That's a pretty long way. But look, when you talk about a time of emergency, and whether it is a hurricane, Washington State will often deploy National Guard troops to help with hurricane assistance, natural disasters, wildfires. We've done that for California. And to me, this is just as big of a national emergency and a national crisis. Now, I don't think we have the spare law enforcement resources like Idaho does to send our state police down there. We're a little short in that category. We have the lowest number of law enforcement per capita of any state in the country. However, we do have National Guardsmen and women who I'm sure would be eager to go down and to help with that mission. And I don't see why we wouldn't help. And this is something I've been preaching for a while, that the border crisis directly impacts us. Where do you think the fentanyl is coming up through? Where do you think these drugs that are killing people in our communities and our streets are coming from? And, you know, the drug epidemic also leads to a crime epidemic in our communities. And so why would we not go and help? And of course, the answer to that is political. I've said that I think the King County executive, Seattle's mayor, the governor should be having weekly press conferences urging the Biden administration to do more at the southern border to help save lives in our state. If our politicians truly were acting in the best interest of the people they serve, they would be all over this request from Governor Greg Abbott. They would be all over it to say, you know what, we disagree politically, but we want to make sure that people who have a reason to come in can get in and seek asylum, and those who don't are not coming in to traffic people, to traffic drugs through our states. So again, it's just another example of the failure of the two-party system, of how it turns politicians into people who care more about winning and more about political party and political messaging than they do about the people that they're supposed to serve. So honestly, it is truly a shame that Governor Jay Inslee would never answer this call from Governor Greg Abbott, but won't look at the border crisis for what it really is and look at it as an opportunity to help and to save lives on the streets of our state and many other states. Truly, truly a shame. Okay, coming up next, we're going to take your comments from the live feed for those of you who are consuming the show live today. But first, I am down more than 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, and I'm feeling really good going into summer. I already told Nicole I picked out a nice, cute little pink dress to wear to Emerald Downs on Saturday. So that'll be fun. And I just feel really good. I think the bottom line is that that's what it is about to me. Like, not the number on the scale, but just feeling good. And I've heard from so many of you who have started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan since we started advertising for them in January. And I heard from a couple people yesterday saying, hey, does it work? Yeah. I mean, it works really well. Is it magic? No. And I would never pretend that it's magic. You have to follow a pretty strict diet for 60 days. But I was able to lose more than 30 pounds in just 60 days. It was such a quick transformation. So if you want to lose some weight, be feeling better before summer, you still have time. I mean, 60 days from now would put us at what? July 17th, right in time for just the heat of summer to be feeling good about yourself. A lot of people lose 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two on the program. So check out EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. The easiest thing to do is just to click on the button for a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan. Doesn't cost you anything, just 15 minutes to figure out if the program is right for you and make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Okay, let's get to your comments. Bill Biz with a super chat, $20. I love it. Brandy, after watching your podcast on Olga Sagan's announcement, I went to her website and contributed. Awesome. If nothing else, she should be a welcome voice of sanity on the Seattle City Council. Public safety shouldn't be political. I totally agree. We talked about the owner of Piroshki Piroshki, Olga Sagan, who we've had on the show many times. She was part of our series on truth tellers. You know, she owns this popular Seattle bakery, had to close a location of it on 3rd Avenue over crime, people using her storefront as a drug den, shootings down at the Walmart, the McDonald's of death down the street. And she's now running for Seattle City Council District 7, which is the council seat for downtown. She's running against the incumbent, Andrew Lewis. And I've said that I think she'll be wonderful at the job. And I let you guys know that that's the first political campaign I've ever contributed to is Olga Sagan's. And that was one of the reasons, if you're on the YouTube chat, my question today on the poll was, should I reconsider my policy of not endorsing individual candidates? And actually 58% of you said no, that you don't want me endorsing individual candidates. So technically, Nicole's like, I haven't endorsed Olga, but I think that it's often, given my opinion on things, clear who I'm supporting in a particular
contributing
election.
To the campaign implies you're endorsing them at some level.
I guess. The reason I ask that is I've had a lot of candidates ask me for endorsements over the last 2 years or so. And my policy has been that I don't proactively or in response to endorsement requests issue individual endorsements. But there are some candidates that I really like and some I really, really don't like. And so I've sort of toyed with the idea of endorsing people, but you guys seem to not like that idea. I'm still going to give my honest, unvarnished opinion, but I do agree that official specific endorsements isn't an area I'm willing to venture into yet.
Well, yeah, considering we want to open up the show to all different voices.
Yes.
And if you endorse one, it seems silly to have the opponent on, right? But if we're just being fair and letting both of them come on, it makes sense.
I mean, I would never ask a candidate to come on under a false premise. Like, no. I give my very clear opinion on people. Right. Like, if Bob Ferguson was here, he knows that I don't want him to be governor. Right. So it's like an anti-endorsement.
Right.
Mariana on that says, Marion says, Walter Cronkite didn't even tell his wife who he voted for, but I think there's something upfront about it too. Tough call. But I'm also not Walter Cronkite. I give my opinion. I'm a political commentator. And so if I'm sitting here and dogging on one particular opponent or saying like Olga Sagan that I'm like, I think she'd be great because she could help save downtown. Isn't it kind of obvious that I support her politically? So it's this weird place to be in. When I was at Fox, of course I'd never endorse a candidate because I was doing straightforward news. But, you know, just an interesting conversation. I will say I have supported referendums in the past, and I will continue to do that. For instance, my understanding is there's going to be a referendum to overturn Senate Bill 5599. There's lucky stretching. Government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. You better bet that I'm going to be out there trying to gather signatures for 5599. But that's right. Not an individual person. That's a policy. Matt says, Zemrel Downs keeping the Dorian Monson Memorial Purse on the down low. I can't find anything about it. It's come together very quickly. I think they are going to post something about it.
Yeah, apparently Monday, Tuesday are their day off. So yeah. Hopefully Wednesday, Thursday, they'll get something up there.
Right, but we also are probably have a bigger reach than them anyway. Right.
I did get not everybody checks the website, I guess, but I did get a text saying that it's going to be the third race.
Third race.
First going off at 2, so the third race around 3 o'clock.
Okay. All right. Good info. Yep. And we'll talk about it again tomorrow, and we'll update you with anything. But yeah, just show up and have fun.
Cheer.
Okay, Megan says on Patreon, thank you for being a subscriber. Yay, catching you live today. The new unbelievable theme music has really grown on me. I boop at the end every time. Good. Hear that, Daniel? Some people like it. Boop. DC says, after all the programs and funding, we end up with an even bigger homeless and drug problem. Yep, homeless industrial complex. paying $247,000 salaries to someone who can't even fix the problem and gives up a couple years in. I don't think providing them needles and safe places to do drugs is helping much. I agree. I don't think it does either. Steven says, so Mark Doan stated he has seen too many people burn out and didn't want that for himself. Makes me wonder what he was getting himself into taking that position with a city with such a horrible homeless issue. That's exactly what you said, Nicole, which is, what did he expect? Right. It's got like the worst homeless crisis, one of, in the nation, besides maybe San Francisco. And it's like, you're going to burn out. 100%.
Well, especially, most of us burn out if we don't see reap the rewards of what we're doing, or the benefits, or like see the success that we're building on. So it makes you feel like you're doing something and accomplishing something every day. And if you don't see that, which I don't think many of us see, the progress that's been made, then it does. I agree. That would get to be a burnout.
If we had been doing this podcast for 18 months, which we have about 18 months, and no one was watching, I don't think I'd keep doing it.
Right.
I mean, I'd give it a little bit, but if we didn't have any viewers, I'd probably give up. Okay, Rachel says, why isn't Governor Abbott sending busloads to Seattle considering it's a sanctuary city? Good question. Maybe not as visible as sending them to to Times Square and to the vice president's house and outside the White House. Aaron says, damn, this sheriff needs to be more public facing. He's very well spoken. Talking about Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Fortney. Yeah, he's great. And he does do quite a few interviews. He's just been awesome up there. And very just like, I almost appreciate the fact that he has done interviews but is still getting stuff done. Because I see a lot of public servants who it's like one or the other. It's like either they're talking so much on the news that they're not focused on anything except getting their name and face out there, or they're nose to the grind and getting nose to the grind. Okay, H says, Snohomish County Sheriff is the best. Sheriff Fortney is so very loved by the people in SnoCo. Harold says, wow, a lot of love for Adam Fortney today.
Yeah.
Harold says, the sheriff is a stand-up guy. I wish we had him with a broader level of responsibility. Let me see here. Richard says, I agree that Mark Doan's was urged to resign. Very, very possible. Jackie says, on Patreon, the Seattle Times closes comments on anything that will blow up the comments. They do a decent job of reporting, but they do have some bias, and they protect that bias by closing comments. Yeah, I think actually the editorial board of the Times does a more fair job of assessing the issues than we see in the reporting in the Seattle Times. Okay, let's see here. Good comments today, guys. I appreciate all your activity on the chat. Okay, let us get to our sanity check for the day as we've gone over time. Okay, Elon Musk did another interview, and these are so fascinating. He picks people who aren't good interviewers. Like, Elon, come on with us. We'd do a much better interview with this. This interview also proves something I've believed for a long time, because if you'll notice, when I do interviews, I never have papers in front of me, unless I like specifically have something I need to reference, like a quote or something. And I always think that the amount of paperwork an interviewer has in front of them, there's an inverse correlation to the quality of the interview. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he speaks with this guy from CNBC, and there's a clip that's been played a lot. We're going to play a little chunk of it here, where the interviewer is asking him about some of the stuff that he tweets and if he should maybe put the brakes on a little bit, given the impact that some of his tweets can have for Tesla and for Twitter as a platform. Watch.
You know, you do some tweets that seem to be, or at least give support to some who would call others conspiracy theories.
Well, yes, but I mean, honestly, you know, some of these conspiracy theories have turned out to be true.
Which ones?
Well, like the Hunter Biden laptop.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. So. You know, that was a pretty big deal. There was Twitter and others engaged in active suppression of information that was relevant to the public. That's a terrible thing that happened. That's election interference.
But how do you make a choice? You don't see, I mean, in terms of when you're going to engage. I mean, for example, even today, Elon, you tweeted this thing about George Soros. Well, I'm looking for it because I want to make sure I quote it properly. But I mean, you know what you wrote, but. You basically,
it reminds me of Magneto, which is like, you know, calm down, people. This is not like made a federal case out of it.
You also, you said he wants to erode the very fabric of civilization, and Soros hates humanity. Like, when you do something like that, do you
think
about...
Yeah, I think that's true. That's my opinion.
Okay, but why share it? Why share it? Especially because, I mean, Why share it when people who buy Teslas may not agree with you? Advertisers on Twitter may not agree with you. Why not just say, hey, I think this. You can tell me. We can talk about it over there. You can tell your friends. But why share it widely?
I mean, this is freedom of speech. I'm allowed to say what I want.
You absolutely are. But I'm trying to understand why you do, because you have to know it's got a... It puts you in the middle of the partisan divide in the country. It makes you a lightning rod for criticism. I mean, do you like that? People today saying he's an anti-Semite. I don't think you are.
No, I'm definitely not. I'm like a pro-Semite, if anything.
I believe that probably is the case. Yes. But why would you even introduce the idea then that would be the case?
I mean, look, we don't want to make this a George Soros interview.
No, God, no. I don't want to at all. But I'm trying, even came up though in the annual meeting. I mean, you know, do your tweets hurt the company? Are there Tesla owners who say, I don't agree with his political position because, and I know it because he shares so much of it? Or are there advertisers on Twitter that Linda Yaccarino will come and say, you got to stop, man. Or, you know, I can't get these ads because of some of the things you tweet.
This is a real pause for those just listening.
You know, I'm reminded of the scene in The Princess Bride. Great movie.
Great movie.
Where he confronts the person who killed his father. And he says, offer me money. Offer me power. I don't care.
So you just don't care. You want to share what you have to say?
I'll say what I want to say, and if the consequence of that is losing money, so be it.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. That was a very long pause. I think it was 12 seconds long.
Right.
It was deep in thought and then came out with a movie quote. But it speaks so much to how I feel. I mean, I'm not making Elon Musk kind of money. So maybe you can give people, you can care a little less when you have that much money, maybe. But I always reference the Jordan Peterson quote where he said, it's incumbent on each of us to set up our lives in a way where we can afford to tell the truth. And Elon Musk has set up his life in a way where he can afford to tell the truth. And, you know, also offer opinions that might not be popular. And do I agree with everything Elon Musk tweets out? No. But I'm not going to try to discourage or squash him from saying those things. And it was interesting, the interviewer, to have asked a question where the rebuttal was so obvious about you tweet things that some people say are conspiracies, and Elon says, well, like what? And Elon is able to give him immediately an example of something that was deemed a conspiracy that actually was never a conspiracy. The Hunter Biden laptop story. How many COVID stories could we say were called conspiracies and then turned out to be true? And so really not a great interview from CNBC, but I think a really important point that Elon Musk made about, look, if I lose money for telling the truth, that's okay with me. I don't care. And I wish more of us could not care about the consequences of simply saying what we think is true or what we think needs to be said.
I also think it's a free country. Like, that's what we're proud of. That's what he's created, his
right.
world. Yeah.
And
say what you feel. And if you, I mean, I think he says things that he's trying to say, to bring attention to on purpose. He wants to make a difference. So.
Yeah. Well, and also look, do words have consequences? Of course they do.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is he's ready to deal with the consequences.
He's calculated the risk.
Right. He's calculated the risk. If powerful people say bad stuff, can that have negative implications for the world? Yeah. But then Elon Musk would have to pay the price, whatever it might be. You know, people not wanting to buy Teslas, people not wanting to use Twitter, doing X, Y, and Z, fine. He's saying, I'm willing to take that price. And so that's his decision to make. And that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Don't forget to check out Patreon and Locals. You can find out how to subscribe for as little as $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And you'll see the post that has the details about the litter cleanup that we're going to do on Saturday. today. And then also we'll talk again tomorrow and remind you about the Dory Monson Memorial Purse happening at Emerald Downs Saturday afternoon. And I hope you guys can join us for one or both of those opportunities. As always, thank you for being here and thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback.